Hello, and welcome to this month's episode of the Women of Color Empowered Show, hosted by Kimberly Lee Miner, CEO of the Women of Color Retail Alliance. I'm Hope Katz-Gibbs, producer of the show on the Incandescent Radio Network and incandescent.tv, where we bring you fascinating interviews by entrepreneurs around the country. Our favorite question, what's your story? This will be part one of a two-part series that we will promote not just on our channels, but also on Kim's iTunes, Spotify, and iHeartRadio channels. So welcome, Kim. I have to tell you, Kimberly and I have known each other since we were 11. We went to school together in Lafayette Hill, Plymouth Meeting, Pennsylvania, and I have been a fan of hers forever. Our paths seem to keep crossing. And now this year, if I can say it, we're turning 60.
You really blew people's mind, because as I look on this screen, I'm thinking there is no way that we're 60. Like I don't even know what 60 feels like, but we certainly don't look 60.
God bless.
That's right. Yeah.
I'm so thrilled to be doing with you. So honored. You have accomplished remarkable things in your career. And today we will start this exploration. So what we're going to do on your show, and I love this, is we're going to ask 10 questions to your guests. And I am going to ask these questions to you starting today. Okay, question number one, we're going to talk about breaking barriers. Can you share a pivotal moment when you felt you broke through a significant barrier as a woman of color?
There were a few moments, and they're moments because they fleet. They go over. You realize, oh, I've done something here. And then the next thing happens. But I guess one of the memories that stands out to me is when I was at Foot Locker. And Foot Locker, if you don't know, it was based on a lot of men from Tom McCann came together in Foot Locker, and that's how they grew it. And then it was bought by Woolworth, but the same men who had come up the ranks together were there. And so I was the only woman who had a leadership role, and I was the only person of color who had a leadership role. And so I would be in these meetings all the time with just all of these white men. And some of them were very respectful and really embraced the knowledge I brought to the table, and some just didn't. So it made my life very difficult, because I was trying to build an organization within Foot Locker that would support private label and a global expansion of product for them. And there were some of those men who were just standing in the door, and they didn't understand, because it was new. You know, no one had done it before. And why would we bring you in? You don't have, athletic background. And I remember I was in a meeting, and one of those people was talking loud and not, you know, didn't want to hear what I had to say. And he was like, well, why are you even talking? I mean, this is how like serious it was. And I remember I let him finish. And then I stood up to make my presentation, and I had saved the company $10 million with my strategy of logistics, import, and the factory, and making it a very different relationship. And so in addition to saving the company $10 million, that year we had added $200 million to the bottom line. And I got to say that. And for a minute before I spoke, you could see that some of the other men were kind of, oh, maybe Kevin's right. But after I spoke, they all like just didn't look at him anymore. And they were like, okay, let's talk. Like, let's talk. And then shortly after that, I won a key contributor award for the work that I had done. And that moment really changed things for me as a professional there. And I think it allowed them to see a person of color differently, because it was after that, they actually had started promoting a few who were in the stores, and I was invited to more meetings, and you could see it changed. Now, it changed back after I got pregnant with my first child, which is when I was working at Foot Locker. But that win stayed with me for a long time, because it had to. Like, you have to have a win every now and then, or just, why are you doing it? But that stands out.
And I think, you know, it's so interesting for women in general to be heard and listened to and feel like we want to keep this going. I mean, research shows women don't run for office unless they know they're going to win. So it's a really interest in psychology, and men just always research.
They think they're going to.
They just show up and they, yeah. So it's a complex situation for women, and especially women of color, right? Which I can't speak to, but, you know, I want to tell our audience, we had you on our Black Lives Matter radio show, podcast and video series hosted by Tony Farmer. And that was so amazing because we were having that conversation after George Floyd was murdered. I was inspired to we have to talk about this. So this is really season two of that show, but even more to my heart, Incandescent Women is one of my magazines, and really shining a light on this spectacularness of women, but also talking about what makes us roll and why we do what we do. So I want to step back for one second and have you just kind of read your resume to us, because, okay, Foot Locker, and where else have you worked?
So we often talk about our professional journey, right, Hope? And I am a believer of a portfolio more than a journey. I think life is a journey, but you pick up different bags along the way and you create, you know, your portfolio. And I can't talk about my professional portfolio if I don't talk about my life portfolio, right? And because I meet people all the time and they're like, oh, you know, you're just so confident and you seem to have been that way since you were young. What is that about? Is that real? What do you tell yourself? Why, you know, let's talk about imposter syndrome, like all these things. And I said, well, let me just paint a picture. So I grew up, you said we went to school in Lafayette Hill, but I grew up in Conshohocken. So Conshohocken, Lafayette Hill, they're close, very different demographics, right? Conshohocken is working class, mostly row homes, and a very different aesthetic. But I grew up in a house with parents who, they might have grown, like my mother grew up on Elm Street. She wanted to move up the hill. My father grew up in West Virginia. He came east, right? Because they wanted a different life. And while we stayed in Conshohocken, a lot of that was because my mother wanted to be close to her mother. My life in Conshohocken was different. We traveled. It was all about books and learning. And quite honestly, as a result of that, I had to be a really strong person, strong kid. I had to be confident in who I was because we were the first Black family to move into the neighborhood that I grew up in, right? As lore would go, the person who was selling the house told my dad, I'll burn it down before I sell it to him. And my dad was like, well, that's fine. I have a match because I'm calling my attorney because it's against the law for you not to sell this house. So my wife wants this house. We're going to buy this house. So when you come from people like that, you have to be like, you can either be as strong or you can be very weak because you feel like they're going, you can't compete. But I never felt like I had to compete with my parents. I always felt like they were showing me, like they were giving me glimpse and examples of how to be strong in an environment that didn't want you, that wasn't going to support you. And how do you still show up? And so that's kind of who I became, because living where I lived, the emphasis on learning, the fact that I had so many interests, I mean, my goodness, you know, dance and art and, you know, writing, everything. Like I wanted to do everything. Guitar, if it was there, I was like, oh, I want to try that. That's part of life. I want to know. Because that's who I was as a kid. I had to be really strong and I had to be confident in who I was because it was coming from both sides, right? So we're the only Black family. So who are your friends on this side? And nothing I thought of, but as the only Black family, a lot of the kids who lived on Elm and Hector Street had a problem with me because of the way I talked, because I had long hair, like nothing that I had to do with. Like, it wasn't like I spit on anybody or I talked down anybody or like had a problem. It was just because this is who I showed up as. And I didn't consciously think it when I was younger, but as I got older and got into high school and I just was like, huh, this sounds like a them problem and not a me problem, because I'm not doing anything other than just being myself. And why should I make myself small so they can feel better about themselves? They could read books. They could do anything. And so I think I took that attitude and it just became more and more as I got older and learned more about who I was and what the potential for me could be, because I tried different things and some I failed at, some I did really well. But I saw that the things I failed at didn't kill me. They really did make me stronger, because it gave me just more informed pictures of who I was. And so when I went into Macy's executive training program, I didn't want to get into retail. That was the furthest thing from my mind. Like, I have my degree in radio, television, and film. I had a jazz show. I was on Power 99. Like, I thought that was going to be my path. And there was just something that wasn't happening with it at the pace that I thought it should. And so finally, I remember talking to my dad, and I was like, this recruiter is just, he won't leave me alone. He's like, but what do you mean? And I said, well, every time I'm like on campus near where he is, he just pops up. And he's like, Kimberly, have you changed your mind? You could take the test. And I told him, I was like, I'm going to college, and then I'm probably gonna go to grad school. How am I gonna tell my parents I'm gonna be in retail? Because at that point, retail to me was the mall, right? Who works at the mall, right? And so my dad said, well, tell me more. So we were talking about it, and he came back and he was like, did you know that the Macy's executive training program is like the Harvard of retail? And if you get into the executive training program, it doesn't mean that you get a job with Macy's. It means you've gotten into their little mini MBA program. You're going to school for that anyway. Can't hurt. They're going to pay you while you're there. And if you have the aptitude and you decide you want to continue, then you have a job. I think you should take your ass in there tomorrow and say, yes, I want to take the test. Right? And I was like, oh, okay. So I did. And I scored very well, because what I learned is that retail is not about the part-time sales in the store. That's great. You're having one-on-one connections with people every day. And I think that's fantastic. And it really gave me a different view of what that is. But it's about storytelling also. And that's what I love doing. I love meeting people. I love telling stories and connecting people. And I discovered that that's what retail really was too. I'm just telling stories with product, right? And with the marketing. And so from there, I actually started working there and went to Drexel grad school while I was working at Macy's, which was crazy because I worked 70 hours a week. But I worked there, quickly promoted, 3 promotions. Then I got recruited to Express in Columbus, Ohio, that's a whole nother story. But while I was at Express, and these are some of the stories I tell to young people, think about, sometimes you overthink things. And here's why. So I was offered a job at Express. It was a store analyst position, and it was part of the financial organization. Now, I've always been great with math, and I love it. It's just not where I wanted to live my career. And so when they offered me the job, it was a Saturday. They were taking me around, you know, show me Columbus. And the head of the CHRO said, okay, well, we're really excited, Kimberly. We're going to offer you a job. And this is the job, store analyst. I said, but a store analyst? I just came from Macy's executive training program. I've had 3 promotions in less than 3 years. What's a store analyst? And what does a store analyst do? And what's the next step? Like, what does that career look like? And as I'm hearing myself ask these questions, I think I was 24. I might have been 24. I'm hearing myself ask these questions and I'm like, okay, go with it. Right. And so he says, well, it's planning, it's financial planning. You'll be part of the planning organization and finance. And I said, I said, so here's the problem. I really want to work here because I think specialty store is the future. Department stores, they're dying on the vine. So I definitely want to work here. But I want to be the president of a brand or the CEO, you know, of a brand. I don't think this path is going to get me there. It might get me to chief planning officer or CFO, but I'm not going to lead the brand. And I really want to do that. Like, that's what I really want to do. And so he said, so what are you saying? I said, well, I guess what I'm saying is thank you, but if this is the only job I can have, I'm going to not take it. And so he looked at me like I was crazy. And he said, well, what would you want your path to look like? I said, well, I would want my path to look like, yes, I'm in finance, because you have to know that that's the basis for any business, right? So great. I want to be in finance for specialty, but I don't want to stop there. So I would like at some point to be able to go on the other side of merchant because that's who runs the business. And that's where I want to be. And with merchant, I have, you know, connections with marketing and with the stores. And that's what I need to be the professional that I see in my head. And he just laughed. And he said, okay. Wow. Okay. So go out, see Columbus. I'm going to talk to Michael. Michael was the CEO. I'm going to talk to Michael and Janice and I'll get back to you. But I have to tell you, no one has ever done this before. I said, I don't think I would have done it if I thought about it. I said, and they probably don't. And then they leave like in a year or two because that's not what they want to do. He's like, okay. So I come back and he's like, he's the bubbliest guy. He was like, I just have to tell you, Kimberly, I'm so excited. I hope you take this job because Michael and Janice, Michael was like, anybody who's bold enough at that age to tell you what they're not going to do is definitely probably somebody who's going to tell you what they're going to do. And that experience, it gave me a sense of freedom that I didn't even know I needed, right? Because I was like, oh, you just took control of your future. But if I thought about it, I know this to be true. If I like just walked out of that office and thought about it, I would have never done that. And I wouldn't have been there the amount of time I was there. So I was there for 8 years and I had 8 promotions in 6 years. And I was key contributor a couple of times. And I still stay in touch with the CEO because he was just like, man, you're good. I was like, thank you very much. And I also think like that's important that people hear that because we work so hard and we never hear it. But the thing that Express did that was kind of detrimental is that between Macy's and Express, I never had a situation, Hope, where being a woman of color got in my way, ever. It just didn't, right? Sometimes I think, why is that? Well, A, I know I busted my ass. And I had, my parents would tell me, you know, like my dad was all about it. Like, you know, if your day starts at 8 o'clock, that doesn't mean you get there and have a cup of coffee at 8 o'clock. That means you get there at 7:45 and your day starts at 8 o'clock. If you want to get promoted, you have to do more than the job. You've got to, you know, like I grew up around that and not a lot of people hear that. And so I knew I want to get promoted. So I need to always look at, okay, where's the gaps? Because if I can fill the gaps and move the business forward, I can get promoted. And so that was my take on my career. And I was all in. Like it was tough. There were toxic people. You know, you worked 80 hours a week. I was overseas by halftime. One time I came back from a China trip and my friend picked me up at the airport and we were talking and I was so tired, my face fell on the plate. Like I just literally just fell asleep. But it was very fulfilling, right? And so I went on from Express, moved to New York City. That's where I worked for Foot Locker. And I built their private label organization. Funny story. 2 weeks ago, I'm in New York as I was being inducted as a top retail expert for 2024. And this young man, his wife was at the affair. And she's like, do you have a minute? And I said, sure. And she's like, I want you to meet my husband. So I said, okay. So she brought him over and he was like, oh my God, I'm so excited to meet you. Oh my goodness. And I was like, okay, why? Nice to meet you too. And he said, well, I work at Foot Locker now and I'm the VP of the organization that you built. He said, and people talk about you all the time. And now I have the opportunity to meet you. Like we use all the tools that you created. And I was like, wow, that's a moment. Like that's a moment. That's a big moment. At Foot Locker, I knew I was a woman of color and I knew what I needed to do to overcome that. As I moved through my career, I would say the first big hurdle and like, you know, it's like flashing lights, woman of color, right? It was at Loft and Loft was female led. The only men were in finance. Yeah, it was all women and just the microaggressions, passive aggressive, like all that. I was like, oh my God, it was so bad. I woke up one morning and I couldn't get my head off my pillow because the stress had caused this rash. And it was horrible, horrible. And I went back and I was talking to my designer who worked with me. And I was like, this is terrible. She goes, oh, is your stomach upset too? And I said, yeah, all the time. She said, oh, and she was Asian. Right. So she we had a special bond. We were both VPs of our areas. And she's like, here, go to my doctor. There's a loft, like illness. She said, yeah, it takes a lot for us to be in this environment. And that was the first time that I tried to bring the women of color. It didn't have the name at the time, but to bring women of color together, because as soon as I realized, wow, this is a big problem. When I look around, I'm the only one. There are two others who are subordinate, but we're peers. So why are they subordinate? They're good at what they do. And I don't have the support. And I see how other people have the support. I mean, even to the point one time I was in a meeting, now I'm the VP of a division, and I made a business call and I said, you know, whatever I said, and the president who I reported to told me to shut up. Yeah. So, you know, if someone feels comfortable enough to tell you to shut up in a meeting, how you're being treated, right? And so that was the first time. And I guess, you know, what I found out later is that the reason it was so difficult is because at that point, women of color at the VP and above level, we didn't even make up 1%. Like we were 0.045% of the retail women leaders. And so it kind of ebbed and flowed. And I went on to become brand president for London Fog, Joe Boxer, Rampage. Fun fact, bought my brand, one of my other brands was Bongo. Kim Kardashian worked for me. It was right at the time of the sex tape and just as they were recording Keeping Up with the Kardashians. So we turned that business around. All the people, when they found out I had signed her, all of our retailers were like, oh no, we're never going to sell your product. And our first appearance event, the line went outside the building and around, and all the people who had called me upset were in that line. Like, okay, good. And so moving into private equity and meeting turnaround teams for different brands, Talbot's, Nine West. And then after Nine West, I was called back to L Brands here in Columbus to be the chief merchant for the home business. Started for home fragrance and then it built. And here's where we talk about the glass cliff. People talk about that a lot. So when I got there, I was, you know, chief merchant for home fragrance. I was able to add like $500 million to the business with some new programs that I created. And they're like, oh, wow, this is great. Let's add some more to that area. And so it grew. And then I had operations. And then they asked me to create their strategy organization. And so I was senior vice president when I got there. I was a senior vice president when I left, but I was a senior vice president of one division. And when I left, I was a senior vice president of three divisions. And probably a big reason for me leaving, because they're like, oh, you did a great job. You did what other people can't do. But instead of giving you a promotion, Kimberly, we're going to give you extra projects so you can prove to us that you deserve that promotion, even though you walked in here and this is what you've done. We're just not really sure. We just want to make sure you can handle it. Okay, well, if I'm going to take on three divisions, what support am I going to get? Because that's a lot. No one else is doing that. You're going to have this. Okay. When is that going to happen? Because I know you've already given me dates of expectations of what I need to do. And so it became this fight. And I felt like I lost the fight because at one point I just physically couldn't move. Like my body wouldn't respond to the messages that my brain was sending it. And I went to the doctor and he was like, you're like 5 minutes from a stroke. We need to get you into a hospital. And so I was out for a good 8 weeks. And in my brain, I had failed because I hadn't been able to do everything that they set up for me to do. And I had never been in that situation before. I'd always had done it. On top of that was, you know, you have to move. So I had to move my family here. So that's a stressor, you know, all those things, balancing it. But in all of that, Hope grew the business from an operational perspective. I took the company from 35% on-time delivery to 97%. percent. That's money. Like, that's just money. I led the transformation of all ops and how every function did their job, because we closed the New York office and I was responsible for that. And so by closing the New York office, those functions that were in New York had to be reestablished in Columbus. So I was responsible for that. And the only thing I could think about was I got sick and I was out, because that's what they made me think about, right? And I remember that there was a challenge to me, and I kind of put it back on their plate. I was like, I'm sorry we have to have this conversation, but we do. We had the conversation and they were like, oh. And it made me think of when I was at Express, right? But it was a different response than when I was at Express. And they said, well, we'll get back to you. Okay. And that was on a Tuesday. I had come back to work the Wednesday before that. So I'm back to work for a week. Friday, I had all these meetings with my teams, and my admin called me and said, oh, they need to see you at Southern Building. For what? They said they have answers for you. Okay. So I go to the other building, and legal and the head of HR are waiting for me in a conference room. And the head of HR says, Kimberly, you gave us some challenges and we heard you. But what we've determined is that based on the challenges you gave us, you probably don't want to work here anymore. And we're not probably not getting the best from you. Huh. I said, okay. Okay. So I said, well, do you want to be specific? And so she started saying things. And I said, well, I have no idea what you're talking about. What is that? She's like, well, it happened while you were away. Oh, okay. So legal is looking at me like, wait, you don't know anything about this? I said, I know nothing of this. It's a fascinating story, but I wasn't here and no one told me. And my boss's name is Amy. I said, I've spoken to Amy. I've met with Amy. Amy never said anything about this. So he was like, oh, ugh. So I said, that's right, but no problem. I negotiated my exit before I made my entrance. So I'm good. And so I left. And when I left, I felt so bad because I had moved my family. And, you know, I felt a little broken. Right. Because I was like, well, how could I have fixed this? How could I have done better? And I went to my therapist and she was like, you're going to have to stop that crazy noise that's in your head, because you could not have changed it. And if you don't remember, let me just give you a little trip through what it was like to work there for the last few years. And that was really helpful. It was really helpful to put it in perspective. And I have to tell you, I feel like while I've been so productive over my professional career, you know, since then, I had a consulting company, and I was the president of Bandeer, which is a, you know, really popular brand in New York. And having that time, it allowed me the freedom to really reconnect with Kimberly. And I remember when I said, okay, my contract, I'm not going to renew my contract again, because I feel like there's something else I should be doing. And, you know, I left Bandeer after almost 3 years and decided it was before I left there that I actually got with Christiane and Karen, and we started the Women of Color Retail Alliance. But we actually really kicked it off after I left. And the three of us have been doing it grassroots for the past 3 years. And I'm just really proud. I feel like I've been the most productive for a bigger cause and to live my life with purpose since I left Bath & Body Works, because everything I was doing up until then, it was great to have the titles and the promotions and to be featured. And that was great, but it wasn't really for anything. It was for what I was building for someone else. And so when I sat down to see, like, to evaluate, you know, this moment in time, take this path, take that path. When I looked at this path, I had added almost $8 billion to incremental business to the brands that I had led, which felt good. Like, that's great. You know, a little more than $8 billion. That's cool. Incremental. That means I was still growing it. That's great. But then I couldn't say, like, there were people I had hired. There were people that were doing very well. And that felt good too. But there's a bigger problem. I just lived through a bigger problem. I have people I know who are living through this bigger problem of being a woman of color in this industry. How can I make a difference there? And my focus I mean, I'm hyper-focused on it now because as of January 2nd, I became the CEO of this organization. But every day I meet someone who says they have been influenced by something they read about, you know, with WACRA, or, you know, a conversation they have with someone, or some mentoring, or they met me at an event, or they met someone else, you know, who's on our board. And to see that, that is the best feeling I've ever had. Like, I used to think it felt great when I saw my products on people, right? Because that was confirmation. Yeah, you've connected. I know it's, but now this is affecting people's lives. And I make less money than I've ever made. Like, I mean, ever. But I feel like I really have a purpose. And I'm pretty proud of that.
Wow. So much to unpack. So much amazing stuff. First of all, hands down to you. I mean, wow. And you have so much to teach, right? And talk a little bit about that. You are a professor.
I am. I never thought, ever, right? My mother's family are all teachers. My mom's not, but like her aunts and my grandmother's sisters, they're all teachers. And they would say, oh, you should be a teacher when I was growing up. I'm like, no interest in that. And then I fell into it. I had met a woman who was the head of executive education at the Ohio State Fisher School of Business. We met through CHIEF, which is an organization for women. It's really just like a networking organization for women who are, I think, VP and above or in the C-suite or something. And we had a really interesting conversation. And she was like, you know, Kimberly, we do so many different things at Fisher. I'd love for you to come in. I want you to meet some people. You know, she said, we have leadership. We have executives, you know, that go into other executive businesses and teach them or, you know, work with their teams. I think there's something there that you might enjoy. So I was like, oh, okay. Like, I didn't really think anything of it. And then there was a class that she had put together that she wanted me to sit in and give feedback on the class. So I took that class and I was like, oh, this is cool. And one of the people teaching the class, like, told me that, you know, he actually had been a CFO with one of the divisions of L Brands. And this is what he was doing. In addition to teaching, he was able to be, you know, work as a consultant. He could do anything. He's like, you know, there's something about the way you think that I think would be great in a classroom. So then after that, I meet with some other people, I'm having coffee. Like, it seemed like I'd meet with someone from OSU and then I get a call. Oh, Kimberly, you're available for coffee because I want you to meet this person. And I met so many people and just conversations. Like, we never talked about me being in a classroom. Just didn't. Just talked about my background, you know, what I enjoy. So fast forward maybe a year later, and I get a call from this woman, and she's like, oh, someone is trying to reach you. They said you haven't returned their email. And I said, oh, I don't have an email from them, but they can send it here. Maybe they sent the wrong email address. So they reached out and they were like, hey, Kimberly, based on your experience leading brands, we have a class that teaches only graduating seniors in strategic brand management, but it's at the highest level of undergrad. And we need somebody who knows how to like really pull that together. Academics, great, but you actually have hands-on, like almost 30 years experience of hands-on. So I said, okay, so tell me a little more. And so they told me, and I said, you know what? Why not? Like if I was working, you know, with a brand, I would be doing this because, you know, you're bringing in new people and you're always, I said, okay, yeah, sure. I'd love to do that. And then a week later, I got a call from the master's program, the graduate school, same thing. Hey, the person who normally teaches this class is really stretched. Would you be able to teach this class? And we know you can because we saw you speak at the, okay, two classes. Well, that's really jumping in. And so my first semester was fall, jumped in. I taught inclusive leadership for the graduates. And most of the graduate students there were either getting their master's of HR or MBA. And then, oh, and I also did a keynote for the new MBA students coming in. And then the other class is strategic brand management. And I have to tell you, I love it. I really love it.
Kimberly, I think that's the perfect place for us to finish up part one of this month's episode of the Women of Color Empowered Show. Again, I'm Hope Katz-Gibbs, producer of the show on the Incandescent Radio Network and incandescent.tv. Be sure to tune in for part two of episode one featuring Kimberly Lee Miner, CEO of the Women of Color Retail Alliance. And that URL that you must check out is www.wocretailalliance.org. As always, thank you for being part of our family. Be incandescent and don't miss part two of this series.